This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Whether you're just looking to stay warm during a hunt or need maximum concealment, the clothing you wear can make or break a hunt. At MidwayUSA.com, we understand hunting clothing has come a long way with more meticulously crafted camo patterns, advanced scent control technologies, and weatherproof options to withstand the elements. Hunters have to wait until their favorite season, but shouldn't wait on gear, which is why MidwayUSA offers super fast shipping. When you're ready for your next system, log on to MidwayUSA.com.
Join Justin Townsend and the Harvesting Nature crew as they explore the world of cooking wild fish and game while sharing recipes, tips, tricks, and lessons learned from their pursuit of wild food. We sure hope you ate before the show, because you're going to leave hungry. This is the Wild Fish and Game Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome back to Harvesting Nature's Wild Fish and Game Podcast. You got your host here, Justin Townsend, and today we're having a bit of a crew chat, and we're going to be covering some awesome topics from the aquatic side of the spectrum that we normally bounce back and forth between. So we're going to be talking about some tasty trash fish, and I don't like using the term trash fish because I often think it puts a lot of negative connotation in something that's very positive. Just like I was telling the guys here that I think that often various species of fish that are unpopular with the general public get a bad rap, when in reality it's just people may or may not have taken the appropriate steps to prepare them in a delicious manner. So we're going to talk through some of those today and share some of our experiences and some of our recipes. And this has been a summer of fishing and adventuring, and so likely to give you hopefully some inspiration to get out to whatever pond, lake, river, stream, or ocean that you live by and throw a hook in the water and catch some fish and put them in the pan. But as far as myself, so this is the first official podcast here in our new, I'll say, quote-unquote, studio. It's my office, which is now located in my downstairs basement, which is pretty awesome. Luckily, I got the highest internet speed I could, so that'll help with connectivity while I'm down here hiding away from the rest of my family. But it's a good space to keep it quiet. But outside of that, if you haven't listened lately, the Adventures for Food podcast is definitely back in full swing, and we've got a lot of great episodes going there. I think most recently we released one where a gentleman was out having a bit of a doe hunt with his dad, and they were able to capitalize on that, and I'll let you listen to the story to figure out how it ends. But there's a special detail there that's pretty cool, pretty captivating, and enjoyable in those moments. But outside of that, make sure you scroll on over to Facebook and join the community page. That's for everything we do here at Harvesting Nature. You can interact with our writers, with our managerial staff. Anyway, those folks that help keep us running. And we're there pretty much on a day-to-day basis. And actually, both Adam and Jeff are like probably some of our highest contributors to that page, sharing recipes and photos and all the great adventures that they're on. So you can definitely interact with them there very, very much. And I guess I kind of gave it away who was on the show. But nonetheless, we're here with that. So we've got Adam here. Adam, as you may remember, if you scroll back and listen to episode 329, Life is Like a Box of Duck Livers. The famed episode where we talk about, man, we talked about everything in that episode, right, Adam?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, made it around.
So, Adam, if you could give the listeners a little reminder of where you're from and what you're involved in and how you found your way into the Harvest of Nature crew.
Sure. I'm up in Canada in the Great White North, but it's pretty hot right now, actually, up here. Living on a little lake, just north of Kingston, Ontario, which is kind of close to the New York state border. I'm also known as the Intrepid Eater. I have a social media personality as the Intrepid Eater, where I post a lot of my food. And I do a lot of fishing on the lake here, a lot of gardening, and I'm an adult onset hunter. So I've been hunting for the last two or three years now, so I'm still very new to it, but I'm really approaching it from a food angle and learning a lot, and hopefully this hunting season I can fill my freezer with a few more things, a few more goodies than I did last year. I've been with you guys now for, I think, since February maybe, mostly just putting in recipes and dealing with the food side thing. So yeah, I'm really enjoying it so far.
Nice. Well, we thank you for that. We love having you. And also, we've got Jeff with us. Jeff was last chatted with us in episode 328, where we fishing in a tuxedo. That's a great episode where we learned both Jeff and I have some very close connections down in South Florida that you'll have to listen to figure out what those are. But I'll let Jeff remind you a little bit about himself and how he got involved with us.
Yeah, I'm Jeff Benda. I've got a website, wildgameandfish.com, and where I post different recipes, and it's kind of a newer website. So I've been hunting for almost 20 years now. I live in North Dakota, and I moved around a lot, and I was actually, you know, ready to go down and settle in Florida, but it was hunting that kept me here in North Dakota, and I absolutely love it. So live here with my wife and daughter, and they love wild game, and so I keep cooking for them and keep making recipes, and having fun doing it.
Yeah, and we're definitely thankful for those recipes. Those have inspired a lot of things, a lot of good conversations. I even think, like, both of you, you may or may not know this, but you've challenged me to make sure that it kept me in check, to make sure I'm stepping up my game and staying on top of it. So I'm really thankful for what you both do. So it's fun. It's fun in that regard, for sure.
And I'm glad Adam is on here, because I love his stuff on Instagram and his recipes. So it's a really, he's got a lot of good stuff on there. So
likewise, it's nice to finally actually get to meet each other, even if it's on a podcast, hopefully in person one day.
So with that being said, and us here to talk about sort of trash fish, where do you guys lie in the term trash fish, and sort of how do you consider what fish you do or don't eat?
I tend to say trash fish with air quotes a lot, because I don't believe there are too many trash fish out there. There's always some way to cook them and some seasoning you can use or some preparation that you can do that will make most things edible. I know not everything in life is edible, but you can really push the boundaries of what people say is good, and you just have to explore and experiment to find your way through that, I think. And the best is to stop listening to what everyone else thinks and find your own way sometimes with that.
Yeah, I would agree with Adam. I think it's experimentation, right? So I've had I really made it a goal this year to keep everything at least like a species. Try to keep everything and then experiment with that. And I've only had one epic fail, which we can talk about later, but which cost me more in scented candles than anything else. Right? but I mean, everything else was, good. So yeah, I think it's just all in the preparation and how you look at it. Definitely.
I think I'm definitely, I'm in agreement with both of you on that. And as far as is looking at, you know, fish as a whole is, I think if you look culturally throughout time, like people have eaten fish a lot, whether it be freshwater fish, whether it be saltwater fish, whatever availability of fish, people were eating it in some manner. And as society has evolved and as we've changed and our palates have adjusted and we've figured out different ways to prepare fish, it's interesting to see the species of fish that we've settled on, which are acceptable to eat, which are not acceptable to eat, which, you know, through, we'll say, cultural evolution have become unacceptable to eat, and which through human consumption have been unavailable. You know, if you look at sort of the way we've treated some species of fish, where we've almost fished them into extinction. So I think it's as you look at the whole pattern of how we eat seafood and freshwater fish and everything, it's an interesting thing to look at. And even regionally too, like how you can walk into the supermarket. Like, for instance, we went to the Whole Foods here the other day, and you know, when we were down in Key West, I primarily bought a type of shrimp called Key West Pinks, and they're grown there in Key West, or not grown, but they're harvested in the Florida Keys. They're very specific to that ecosystem. Well, we walk into the Whole Foods, and what do we see? A frozen bag of Key West Pink shrimp, right? Which I noted, I was like, these are actually cheaper than what we pay for them in the Keys when we get them, you know, almost fresh, which I think I find absolutely unnerving. But, second, it's just like, the availability of produce and products and fish and meat across the continents has changed so much over the years that it also has shaped the way that we eat food, and, specifically seafood. Just a little nugget, I guess, in the back of my head that I think about, but, I think looking at sort of, as Adam, you put it best with the quote, the air quotes of trash fish, I don't understand. It's hard to pinpoint, and you have to dig back deep. In some instances, it's probably never really relevant why people stopped eating these types of fish. Because I'm sure at some point somebody's like, oh, yeah, we're going to eat whatever we can catch. You know, It seems pretty logical in the evolution of eating of, hey, I'm really hungry, so if I figure out whatever this is, I'll eat it. And if it doesn't kill my brother over there, then I'll probably eat it too. I don't know. Do you guys think in the world of fish, people lean towards labeling sort of the trash fish more the saltwater side, more on the freshwater side? Do you think that there may or may not be a difference?
I think just in my experience, I'm so far away from any ocean that I just deal only in the freshwater side. So everything I hear has to do with freshwater fish, and I'm haven't had much exposure to the saltwater side of things, except what I have in the grocery store frozen, which is probably not going to be other people's trash fish. So, but I hear a lot of it about the fresh fish around this region for sure.
And what types do you hear people talking about?
A little bit of everything. Like, pike is the biggest one, which I've talked about before, but people just don't seem to, they get upset when they get a pike on the line. They say it's not worth anything, throw it back. It's garbage. It's no good. It tastes awful, blah, 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 blah. Have you even heard that about like largemouth bass, which I just ate last night? It was awesome. Mm-hmm. And like you were saying about the regionality of things, like the people up here where I'm from don't generally eat much catfish. But in the south where you guys are from, like catfish is huge. And some people look at me funny when I'm eating catfish. So you can just see how trash fish can change from you know, a couple hundred miles and people are looking at the same fish completely differently. So it's an interesting thing.
I think it's always interesting, and you mentioned both pike. So me having pike was actually the first time in North Dakota. A guy showed us how to fillet them, excluding the Y bones. And it was kind of like revolutionary for me because I was like, this fish literally hits on anything you throw at it that jingles and flashes. Like, why aren't people eating this? And the guy was like, well, to be honest, like, people get frustrated. They don't want to fillet it. They don't want to deal with the bones. They don't want to do that. Like, you know, why mess with it when you can, you know, catch a walleye or catch another type of fish that's easier to handle? And it's just, you know, we spent that trip like almost targeting pike specifically because they're easy to catch and we could eat them. And I think about largemouth bass and both catfish as well. Like, I grew up eating largemouth bass. We would go to farm ponds all over Oklahoma and just, you would catch as many as you could catch and take them home and fillet them, and they were going in the fish fry or whatever you were making with them. And you know, a lot of people, I think, as it's turned into a major trophy fish, unfortunately people choose to let it go. I guess that's a good thing in some regards, but I think some of the stress that the fish goes through, you may or may not have a good survival rate. But and then catfish, oh man, I could go on for days about catfish. But and Jeff, you've been posting a lot of catfish recipes lately.
Yeah, I live like 2 minutes from the Red River of the North, and that's, it runs from so, like, if you look at a map, the North Dakota Minnesota border, it runs from down like in Wahpeton, North Dakota, so about an hour south of Fargo, and then it runs all the way up to Winnipeg and empties out, the Red River of the North empties out in Lake Winnipeg. And so this river is famous. I mean, people travel, like, there's tournaments, and people have traveled internationally to come fish like giant catfish here. But you know, you go down to the river here and nobody's keeping them. And, you know, you go south of the Mason-Dixon line and everybody's keeping them. So, you know, that, yeah. And it's, so will they come up here and, you know, you go down to the river here and guys are targeting walleye and, you know, they might target smallmouth bass if they're that kind of guy, you know, but you can catch anything. I've had a buddy catch a baby, like a little sturgeon in here, you know? But you know, I honestly could go down any day after work and just hang out there and go grocery shopping. I wouldn't even need to have a rod or reel. Like, I could just go and hang out there and say, Hey, you're going to keep that? And they're like, what, do you want this? Yeah, I would. I'll take five. And that's my limit. I would be happy to take that home for you. So, you know, it really, yeah, I've been cooking a lot with it because that's what I've been catching. There's a lot of other fish and a lot of recipes. We're in a major drought right now, and so the water level is really low. So there's a lot of spots, like a lot of drainages that go off the river. Just a lot of spots that I've hit before, and just the fish aren't there. You know, some of those spots like carp, like there's a spot that's like hot for it. If after a big rain and it fills up and I can't do that, freshwater drum, that spot, it's all dry. So, you know, but those are fish that we target, that we cook with. And so my only option right now is the catfish. And so that's what I've been cooking with. You know, it's opportunity.
It's a pretty good option, in my opinion. Yeah. Definitely a huge catfish fan. But So you mentioned carp. And in a lot of places, carp would be ruled as like definitely a trash fish.
Except for everywhere else in the world.
Exactly.
Right? So, exactly. Yeah. So my last name is Benda. So Czech Republic. You go to Prague, Chris. So the tradition in Prague, in the Czech Republic, is for Christmas dinner, everybody goes out, like they have lakes in, like they have a lake in town where they raise carp. Everybody goes down to the market right before Christmas. They all get their carp. Then it's really weird. They throw it in the bathtub for like 2 days before, which I've never understood. Who's showering before Christmas Eve church? Like, anyway. So, but they're throwing this catfish and they hang onto it and then they prepare it. That's a very traditional, in the Czech Republic for Christmas dinner, everybody has carp. Yep. That's a huge tradition in the city of Prague and in other parts of the Czech Republic, but all over the world. If you look at, what people are eating, carp is a huge, food source. And there's a program in Chicago, because of the Asian carp, and there's mm-hmm. there's money for people who want to develop recipes. And there's actually a restaurants that are, have been doing really well because they're serving Asian carp burgers, and there's money from the government subsidizing them to serve those, because they're trying to encourage people to eat them, so that they're encouraging people to target them, and because people are able to do it commercially and because they want to get rid of them. So yeah, carp's good. And if you prepare it right, there's a lot of great opportunities, a lot of great recipes out there.
I think Adam, you have a carp recipe, or is it Jeff? I forget the.
It must be Jeff.
I can never say.
Oh, Jeff, the salad. Yeah,
the salad. Yeah.
Yep.
Is that just using steam carp?
No, that was smoked carp. Yeah. So smoked. Then you just, because it's the bones, mm-hmm. but they have those big bones. It's really easy to work around, whether you smoke it or you can bake. I think one of the things that people are dealing with, those, just the way you peel the fish, right? Mm-hmm. And taking it off, and just, does it take time? Yes, but you can go through and get those bones out, and serve it. And so, so I've done the salad there. It's the traditional French, salad but just take any smoked fish recipe. I've done a couple different ones with the smoked fish dip, like the Gold Eyes, that's in Canada. Adam, I don't know if you guys have Gold Eyes. We have, it's like in the northern United States and Canada. Yeah, I think it's more central, like Midwest and like Manitoba.
Yeah, I lived in Alberta for a while and they had Gold Eye up there, but it's pretty rare to see them out in Ontario this way.
Yeah, and those are the ones like down here, like they're just going to take your bait, and just it drives you crazy. And I've never kept them until this year. Like, you talk about a trash fish, guys will cut them up and use them for catfish bait. Because if you want a big cat, you catch a Gold Eye, throw a little nightcrawler on there, you catch a Gold Eye, you cut it up, and then you throw that on a big hook to the bottom, and then you're going to catch a big catfish. That's sure. A, yeah, that's a huge... that's a really popular way to do it. But to keep,
are they just really, really stinky, or once you cut them open,
mushy flesh.
No, it's just So you just throw them on a hook. They've always really worked. And but I kept, like, I just had a day, and like they were just taking the bait. These Gold Eyes, and so I just was like, screw it, I'm just going to keep them and see what I can do with them, So I did them a few different ways, but even then the bones, they have those little bones. So I put them in the smoker and got mm-hmm. all the bones I could. And then I put them in the food processor, and I made that recipe's on the website. But I just made a smoked fish dip, and it was great, just followed recipe for any smoked fish dip. And, I've got two different recipes on the website. One for catfish, and one for the Gold Eye.
So how do you like the smoked catfish for the fish dip? Because I would think it'd be like a little meatier, a little heavier.
Yeah, I mean, you got to trim the fat up, when you're dealing with catfish. But I just follow the recipe for that one, Justin. I use I'm sure you've had it, like the smoked catfish. Or sorry, the smoked fish dip that you can mm-hmm. get on any, like the bar and grills on any beach in Florida. That's what I model it after. When my wife and I are down there, we always order it for an appetizer and she loves it. So when I came up with that idea, she's like, yeah, why don't you, you know, that sounds good. I would eat that. Right. And so I made it.
You know what?
And I loved it. Yeah. She loves
it. I remember us talking about this, in the previous episode. That's right.
Yep.
But yeah, and for that they use like mackerel, which is very, very oily and for those fish dips. So yeah, it's still that dip really intrigues me. I have to get after some catfish. I'm gonna try it. I think I said the same thing last time. But golden, I've never heard of golden eye fish, I don't think.
It's very regional, so you're only gonna find it in the northern United States, the northern Midwest, and then parts of Canada. So that's the only place where you're going to find it. So
I do want to talk a little bit more about pike, kind of circle back around, because Adam, you had a great article where you broke down full on pike breakdown into like every usable piece possible. Like where did you get that idea? Like it was awesome.
I was tired of everyone saying that, oh, like pike is trash or they're hard to clean because the wide bones. And, you know, if you kind of look up online, there's several different ways of cleaning them. And some people have, and you know, a lot of them work, like it's not one way does all kind of thing. But I figured I should just do kind of a definitive, the way that I do it and break it down to the minute actions. So I did like a 70 photo breakdown of every single cut, and it kind of sums off the, if anyone's familiar with it, it's like a five fillet method that works your way around the Y bones. And I went out on bass opener on the lake I live on here, and we've been avoiding bass for months and going for pike and couldn't catch any pike. And then on the first morning of bass opener, I couldn't catch one bass, but I caught a nice big pike, which, yeah, always happened to you. So I figured that was a great time just to like lay it out and do it right from start to finish. And I really don't like letting anything go to waste, so I use as much as humanly possible. I save the head, I save the tails, I save the bones, I save everything and try to use as much of the fish as I can. So that guide really just breaks it right down into every single piece you can possibly pull off a pike. And hopefully it's very easy for people. And like I said, there's other ways to do it, but that's kind of the way I like to do it. So, and sure. it's also in a pictorial. So it's not like a video, because I was watching videos of guys doing it and it's hard to, like your hands are full of fish guts and you're pausing and you're pressing play. And I figured maybe a pictorial would actually be better to really see every single small step. So I chose that route instead.
I appreciate the pictorial because I'm a big detail guy, but I also like, it takes me sometimes those videos, I have to watch them like 3 or 4 times to kind of absorb everything. And with the pictorials, I can kind of stop and like, it can go, you know, almost through cut by cut and say like, all right, analyze this and try to look at, you know, am I looking at knife angle and am I looking at how the specific cuts are made? It allows me to zoom in, zoom out and really appreciate the detail of the work. So that I thought, man, I was so impressed when I saw that.
Yeah, I really liked it. And I've been wanting to use the process and I can't catch a pike now to save my life. So yeah.
Yeah, that's the way it goes.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's all available on the website. I've done some other ones too for like how to make a turducken from start to finish, how to break down a wild goose and stuff like that. So I hope to do lots more and just really get into the nitty gritty of like every single knife stroke kind of thing. I really enjoy making those. So I'm glad you guys like them.
Yeah, definitely. I think a lot of positive feedback on that. People in general, I think, enjoy it. But I've been having pike on my radar, but for different. So, as you guys may or may not know, like I like to spearfish and stuff too. And as I leave the coast behind me, I've been looking for other opportunities. And I discovered that Colorado allows spearfishing for pike and carp. So, But I also learned as I got up here and I joined some of the Facebook hunting and fishing groups and stuff like that. And I've since met two other guys that spearfish here. And the way that I met them is they posted about spearfishing for pike in some of the Colorado lakes. And people like got up in arms about it. Like, whoa, like you're taking the pike? Like, why are you keeping the pike? Like, you should be letting them go. They're like, well, guys, like these fish aren't native to Colorado, one, and two, it's like you're supposed to kind of keep them and eliminate them, and spearing them is a way to take them and be done with them. Because like under the water, they're there. They're like barracuda. They just kind of hang out. So as I understand it, it's sort of easy pickings for a spearo. So we know people got really, really upset. Like I was looking at like pages and pages and pages of negative comments about this guy just kind of asking about spearfishing pike. And then I posted my comment and I was like, hey man, if you need a spearfishing buddy, let me know. Of course, then everybody else got pissed off because of that too. But you know, it is what it is, I guess, at the end of the day.
You know, I don't know if you guys know this, but I actually, if you have ever heard of it, but I just ran into a gal, she was at a wedding. And she was from Russia, and somebody had mentioned, that I do wild game and fish recipes, and I asked her because when they said she was from Russia, and I asked her about this because I had done that shuba salad, that pickled northern under a fur coat,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it was from mm-hmm. Russia, and I asked her, I said, hey, I had asked her about it. And we got in a conversation and she said, that's really interesting that you did pike. She goes, because there's so much folklore and especially children's stories in Russia about magical things. Like if you keep people who keep a pike, they're granted wishes and like there's all kinds of stories out there. And I've actually been looking on the internet since and there's a lot of stuff out there. So it might be, yeah. So I think for those of us who are keeping pike, you know, if we're granted three wishes and, you know, and, I'm going to research it a little bit more. She said some of them are a little scary, but I was going to, you know, instead of, my daughter trying to find Aladdin's lamp, I'm going to tell her that she could target a northern pike and, maybe she could get three wishes off of that. But anyway, so.
I don't know if you want to encourage anybody rubbing the side of a pike that may or may not end in the loss of a finger.
Well, and the slime, see, that's why. See, that nobody does it because of the slime. And so for those who are brave, we will become rich and famous. There you go.
That's it.
Yep.
I'm down. I'll take that.
There you go.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
At Midway USA, we know the AR-15 is one of the most popular rifles in modern American history. Known for its modularity and widespread use, it's often considered essential to any gun collection. The essential things you need to run an AR-15 are usually always in stock during shortages, things like magazines and 5.56 ammo. Whether you're looking to buy a new AR-15 or buy parts for your modern sporting rifle, log on and for just about everything for the outdoors, shop MidwayUSA.com.
So as we sort of think about trash fish, we've covered a lot. We've talked about pike. We've talked about carp. We've talked about catfish, bass, which I definitely want to talk a little more about bass. And I grew up in a place, like I said, where we were pretty much reliant on largemouth bass. And I don't know, do you guys both have smallmouth bass present in any population in your area?
Yeah, we have both largemouth and smallmouth in the lake here, lakes around here. So I catch both on a regular basis out here.
And Adam,
what about you?
Yeah, we've got them too. We have a lot of small. I've actually got a little spot on a lake that's really It's pretty close, and I can really target the smallmouth. But there's also a few lakes around here that have big populations of white bass, and those, like, you can catch, and they're huge. You know, you can keep a ton of them here in North Dakota. I mean, the what they allow for you to keep is great, but people don't want them. Like, they throw them back, and you know, like we've gone to the fish cleaning station and we've had two, and after a long day of fishing, and there'll be guys who are like, they were targeting walleye, and they're like, oh wow, we caught like 100 of those today, we threw them all back. And I'm like, dang it, you know. Yeah, so the, like, white bass is another one that where people, like, we love eating them. And but yeah, I think it's just, it's another one of those things. There's, we treat them like everything else, you know.
I'm gonna be like really honest, like, I don't think I've met a bass I haven't liked. Like, we caught a lot of striped bass, I've caught white bass up there as well. Yeah. And it's just like, the overall bass, I don't get the stigma. And I was kind of asking you both about the smallmouth versus largemouth to see, like, generally, do people in your area lean towards the acceptability of one over the other?
Not that I've noticed. I know people often say you should be throwing them back due to them being a sport fish rather than an eating fish, which plays into maybe some people's perceptions on the flavor of them too. I've heard they're fishy and not really good, which is crazy to me because they taste awesome. But yeah, I haven't noticed much difference in between the small and large mouth as what they say to keep and what they say to leave. So
yeah, I don't understand why people, like, they'll go out and target crappies, but they'll throw away bat. Like, there's, like, if you're doing a fish fry, people aren't sitting there going, wait, what is this? You know, and because I've got it all mixed together. Like, cares. Hang on. That one tasted different. I'm pretty sure that was a smallmouth there. No, it's not happening. So
beer and hush puppies and ketchup and tartar sauce. Like, no one cares.
Yeah. Yep.
Well, even straight up in between, like, the crappie and the smallmouth and largemouth and pike and walleye even, and you do a fish fry and it's all combined. Like, I'd like to see people choose which one's which out of them. And the people who are saying, oh, that one's crap and that one's great and that one's whatever, I'd like to see them choose which one's which if it's all done properly without the bones. Ooh, they all taste really good. And when you fry, when you fry stuff in a big batter like that and it's all in the same oil, like, you're not, there's no difference between them, really.
I think too, like, you know, if you get a white flaky fish and you batter it and you fry it, like, freshwater, saltwater, like, no matter the lot, like, you almost, they're going to be pretty similar in a lot of ways. It's going to be hard to tell. And I mean, that's like what we did a lot with saltwater fish. Like, when I first got into spearfishing and we were, you know, trying every variety of legal fish we could take, it's just like you would just shoot it. People would be like, oh, are you going to take that? And he was like, well, I want to try it. I want to know if I like it or not. And we did some of those, like, I wouldn't say blind taste tests, but we definitely did some taste tests where we had three or four types of fish and we, like, we filleted them and fried them and decided if we liked them or not. And some of them never made it past the fillet table, I'll tell you that, just because, like, you'd cut into them and you're like, oh, nope, this is too much for me. And I think that goes a lot to diet, but I don't know, given the difference in variety of freshwater fish, and I don't know if diet plays as much into the fact. I try to wrap my head around, too, the smallmouth and largemouth difference, and I don't know. I can't either. Like, the enjoyment of eating a bass is pretty much synonymous, like I mentioned. But
so if you're steaming them with barely any flavors, then that's when maybe the flavors start coming through. Like, if you're eating just a pure fish without the grease and without the batter and without the seasoning, I think then you can start to tell the intricacies of flavor in between the different fish. When you're dealing with just, like, the easy flaky white fish. But when, dealt with, like, adding lots of flavors to that, you're not, like, I think you'd be hard pressed to really say, you could easily fool someone, let's say, and tell them that they're eating walleye when it's a bass or a pike or something like that.
Yeah, but my wife's not a big fried fish person, and we've done a lot of baked, like bass, uh-huh. perch, sunfish. I mean, we've had like a smorgasbord, but you know, when I bring the stringer in or the cooler home, and I've got like, you know, two perch, five sunnies, you know, two smallmouth bass, and you know, I get home and she's like, oh great, another day without any walleye for me, you know. So she's like, I'm so glad you brought fish home, all I wanted was a walleye. But I'm like, okay, you know, but how can I make this how she likes it? And so, you know, she likes that baked, you know, she doesn't like things deep fried, and if she does, it's just minimal. So I've cooked a lot with those, and I think just this, if seasoned properly and cooked properly, you know, it's just like anything. You're not, you don't want to dry it out. So it's cooking to temperature. You know, just like a steak, you know, fish, you know, you have to cook it to the right temperature and you have to season it properly. It's just like anything. It's just like anything when we do cooking, there's proper techniques and there's the right way to treat it, and it can come out great. I've not had a bad situation when any of those fish, whether it's white bass, smallmouth bass, largemouth bass, anything, if cooked properly, it can taste really good.
Have you guys, talking about the way we look at fish, have you guys looked at Josh Nyland over in Australia?
No.
Mm-hmm.
So he's got he's
doing amazing stuff.
Oh yeah. So you Jeff, you should definitely check him out on Instagram. He's got a restaurant over there called St. Peter. And it's a restaurant completely dedicated to fish. But I think it was last year, the year before, he came out with a book called The Whole Fish Cookbook. And man, what a great book. And his whole concept behind it is like taking approach of fish as meat, not as something separate, but just the way you treat, you know, a porterhouse steak or a rack of venison or, you know, insert whatever delicious meat that your family enjoys, taking that same approach towards fish. And he does things like dry aging fish, and he's got the breakdown like Adam did on a lot of different fish, and really talk about utilizing the entirety of the fish. And it's I think I got his book last year for Christmas and just kind of dove into it. And I tried to play around quite a bit with it when I was down in the Keys and spearfishing more. And man, it's such a, when you start to kind of put your mind at that point and be like, well, all right, so we know there's good fish and there's bad fish. Culture's driven that into our head of like, don't eat this, eat that. If we step away from that and say, well, we've got this fish over here that's good for X, Y, and Z recipes, and we've got this fish over here that's better for, you know, A, B, and C recipes. So how can we take the fish that's good for X, Y, and Z and really bring out the flavors of that fish and really understand how to make that fish taste better? Or to, you know, add ingredients or complement it just like you would with anything else. And I think in this conversation, as we look at it, the what people refer to as trash fish, which in all reality, people all over the world are eating. So I would honestly love to just get rid of that term. But unfortunately, I think that may be an uphill battle for us. I don't know. I think it's a fun way, and I like what both of you guys are doing and encouraging the use of different types of fish. Like, why not?
Yeah, and like you said, there's people around the world eating all these fish when over here we may not be. And that's a really good way if you're interested in getting into it and trying something new. It's just looking elsewhere for recipes, like Eastern Europe for carp or China. The snakehead fish is commonly eaten all throughout Southeast Asia and China. They love lamprey, sea lamprey in France, and most people would just shudder at the thought of eating a lamprey here, but it's a delicacy elsewhere. So if you're looking to explore them a little bit, it's worthwhile looking to see who else is making them around the world and just following suit, because they've been doing it elsewhere for years and years and years, and they have some really interesting recipes. So I think that's an easy way to assure yourself if you're on the right track or not in eating something that's a little different or challenging.
I think we were talking about other fish from around the world, and it jogged a thought in my mind of like how in certain aspects we may change the common name of fish to sort of be more appetizing and more palatable. And the one that comes to mind is the Patagonia toothfish. You know what you guys call that now? Chilean sea bass. Yeah,
sounds so nice now.
So it just rolls off the tongue. But have you ever looked at a picture of one?
Yeah, they're not as pretty as the fillets like in the grocery store, that's for sure.
I'm looking at one right now, and I'll describe it. It's just like, it's all tooth. Ugh, gray and mealy looking, and just like, ugh, I don't know. But tastes amazing, right? What's another two? Didn't sheep's head used to have a different name?
Well, you're talking, it's a drum.
A name of a lot of different fish.
Yeah,
but a sheep head, that's that freshwater drum. And I target those. We love them. And actually, if you have kids, there is a there's a pearl. There's a little bone in there. It's like a pearl that you can dig out. So last year when we found them, and I'd watched a YouTube video on how to get it out. But Justin, when I took my daughter out there and she caught it, I was like, "Oh, he's got a secret pearl inside," and she was like, "Oh my god!" You know, yeah, it's just like right out of a fairy tale. And we dug it out, and we found it, and she was so excited. And I'm sure she's lost it in her room at some point. So there's probably some fish bones somewhere out in my daughter's room. But yeah, she was so excited for that, and But there's a little spot. It's like near the head. And I know.
Oh, you know what?
Yeah, you can find it on YouTube. So if there's listeners out there, and you can check it out. But that's a fun one too. But they're great tasting fish. Yeah. I mean, because we're in Florida. If you're down by any, you know, dock or pier, and there's guys targeting, you know, they're targeting sheephead. Like, you'll stand there all day and watch them take your shrimp, and it'll drive you crazy. And but up here, their drum, right? Freshwater drum is
freshwater,
it's going to be the same. And and guys wouldn't even think about keeping them, but it's great. They taste great, and we've done a lot of recipes with those as well.
It's crazy to see how that name travels both for freshwater and for saltwater too. I was looking, it's funny, the thing that sticks out to me about sheep's head down in Florida is their teeth, because they crush the shells and coral and crustacean, all that, and they look like they have like four human teeth in the very front, which is such a weird thing. And then California, they have a different sheep's head on the West Coast. There's one, it's like black and red with a little white patch underneath its chin, and it's got like a big old forehead. And that's different too. It's just, I don't know, it's wild. And that one looks equally as ugly. But it tastes delicious, because I've had it out there too. maybe we're starting to get some correlation here as far as looks and palatability. Yeah,
I think a lot of it is psychological, like the, you know, the carp and lamprey, like we're talking about, and snakehead and the sheephead, like and even pike is slimy and toothy, like how much of that is a psychological resistance to accept that it tastes good if the fish looks awful to you? And are we putting back really good fish just because they look ugly? When if you get it in a fillet, it's no problem at all.
Yeah, and I think that goes, you know, we hound on it a lot, of like the separation of seeing where your food comes and actually picking it up in the grocery store. So I don't know.
Yeah, people have no problem picking up bazza fillets now. Like everyone eats bazza and tilapia, no problem. But if you saw a bazza up close, it's a catfish, so it's not that pretty. I don't know if people would be so quick to eat it if they knew what it looked like.
Yeah, and I don't like. I think tilapia tastes like dirt, so I'd rather. You know what? Yes, I'd rather have a largemouth bass than a tilapia.
Absolutely,
100%.
But I think it's like eel pout. I don't know, Adam. Do you guys have those where you're at?
Eel pout.
I've heard of them. I've never.
Yeah, they're really, you know, and they're big. There's a huge tournament in Walker, Minnesota on Leech Lake, and we've gone before, but it's Eel Pout Festival, but they'll wrap. But I know guys that'll target, they'll target them later in the season during ice fishing. But guys will, like, get freaked out because, and it's a like a nighttime bite. They're down on the bottom. And,
oh, wow, they look
it's
like.
The but they'll wrap. Burbot? Yeah, it's the same. It's a burbot. Yeah. Eel Pout.
Okay, that's right.
But I'm sure guys
you can get
like
them around here, yeah.
Yeah, but they'll come out of the ice and wrap their, you know, wrap around your arm and like it's freaky. Ugh. And so who's going to keep that, right? But they're delicious if you've had, you know, at the festival there, guys will, you know, they'll serve like eel pout nuggets and things like that, but burbot eel pout, it's great. It's a great fish, but most guys aren't I think with the festival there in Walker, I think it's changed some minds. I think most people go there just for the drinking aspect and the social.
that's what changes the minds.
Yeah. And there's a lot of guys who are targeting
walleye. Ugly fish
went
down a lot better.
Yeah, but no, it's a delicious fish. It's a delicious fish, and I think more people should try those too.
You know, we have a tilapia down in Florida. It's hugely invasive now. I actually last year we were up on an alligator trip and stopped at Adam Steele's house, and in his pond there's a population of tilapia that live out there, and we caught probably like a half a dozen or so and took them back and like fried them whole. Great fish, but I don't know, still I would take a bass over a tilapia any day.
Sure. And a lot of the ones that you buy. Oh, sorry, go ahead. I was going to say a lot of the ones that you buy are raised in really questionable, like farming practices out in different parts of the world. You don't have no idea what the water quality is like or what they're feeding them. They're just raised on such like en masse that if you're talking trash fish. Maybe that's what we should be talking about rather than these awesome little fish that we can find locally here.
I think, that brings up a really good point, because you look at, obviously I'm a big proponent of catching your own fish and harvesting your own meat. But when you look at opportunities where you don't have that ability, and you want to go to the store and consume seafood and freshwater fish and all that other stuff, I think it's very, very important to, just like with steak, just like with chicken, just like with any other meat, understand the practices of where you're buying it from. And, seafood differs a lot from, meat, is that they have to define the origin of where it came from. And there's a lot of countries I don't support, their seafood or their fish practices just based on, research I've done and knowledge that I've gained over time. And just like some of the tilapia too. I remember, being a younger man and being like, oh yeah, tilapia is great. Super cheap. I'll buy it, cook it, you throw whatever seasonings on it. It's going to taste like that. And then you start researching and you find out exactly what you brought up, Adam, like, man, what are they really feeding this? Another one that stands out is like shrimp from Southeast Asia. A lot of it's being farmed, but it's not the shrimp being farmed that's the problem. It's a lot of the practices for the way the bait for the shrimp is harvested and just all that. And I'll let people, they want to go down some rabbit holes and looking at research and stuff, like that's some interesting stuff. But I would say if you're going to buy fish from the store, first off, try to catch it yourself. If you can't do that, go do shopping and just be cognizant of where you're buying fish from.
And that may have been my issue with the tilapia, because I know it was store bought and it just did not, it just, you know, it wasn't fresh. it just did not taste good for me. So, yeah.
Wow, I'm.
I don't like it. My wife doesn't like it, and just yeah.
The pond caught cat or pond caught tilapia, much the same. So, not missing much there. But so let's we got a few minutes here to wrap up, and let's run through a couple recipes because you guys have some really cool ones. I went through, which is really hard to go through and select. A few fish recipes from both of you because you have a lot of really awesome ones. But let's lead off with pike green curry.
Well, yeah, so like I really love Thai food and Vietnamese food and all the Southeast Asian kind of different approaches to food. It's all been really awesome to me. And the curries in there are pretty like subtly different from the Indian style curries and curries you find elsewhere in the world. And I found that green curry with a coconut, it just goes really well with fish. It's like there's like a hammer of flavor there, but it's still delicate somehow. And so your fish isn't going to get completely lost in it. Where something like a really buttery curry from like Pakistan or something, it might be a little too much for the fish and might get lost. But that green curry just kind of, you can still really taste it in there. So that's, I'm sure, why I chose to put my pike in the green curry, even though I can't remember doing it. But they'll often do like fish balls in it. And I would think that it sounds like a great thing that I would do again. So I really think that any sort of like kind of white fish, and pike is nice because it kind of holds its shape too. It doesn't just like dissolve into things like some flaky fish does. You just make your green curry. You use like there's pretty decent green curry paste. You can buy it for like $4 and it lasts in your fridge for years. And you just take a tablespoon of that, mix in a can of coconut milk, whatever veggies you have on hand, and a little bit of fish, pike or bass or anything like that. And you have yourself put on some rice. You have yourself a meal in like half an hour. That's really cool, super tasty, really different. You can just eat it on like a Tuesday night just after work with the family, without the family waiting hours for you to complete it. So I think, yeah, green curry is awesome and way to go for that. And great with fish.
I think you brought up a really good point that a lot of people think that may or may not think about is like the fish and the curry being a quick go-to like weekday meal. You know, like after work, whatever fish you have on hand, just kind of toss in and add the coconut milk or stock or whatever you want to put in there, and creating like a really nice soupy saucy meal. That's I mean, we've done the curries and stuff before, and it's just like 20 minutes tops maybe, and you're like, everybody's just, as long as it takes to cook the rice, you can cook everything else. So
exactly, it's easy and fast, solid. and tastes awesome. So yeah, it's a good way to go.
It reminds me, so we did back in like the very, very early days, actually it was the same trip up to North Dakota that we caught pike, and at the campsite I prepared you call it like Creole, shrimp Creole or catfish Creole. It's like a Cajun Creole dish. It's basically like a red sauce, a little spicy, but I did it with pike and made like a pike Creole and called it like North meets South. I got some questionable responses from my friends of like, what is this? Like, what are you doing? But no, I made it with a pike, and you're exactly right. Like it held the pike held together very, very well for like the stewing and the simmering. So, I think that was pretty rad. But let's see. Let's move on to catfish scallops. That one's yours, Jeff.
Yeah, that was my latest one. And so, yeah, I'd caught a big, I mean, it's been, I've had it in my head for a while, but I haven't been able to catch a nice, for that recipe, that's the latest one I put on there, for Outdoor Edge, knives, and they, but you need a big catfish. 'Cause I mean, if you're looking for scallops, it's, I'm preparing them just as you would, a scallop. And so you need a fillet that like minimum, you know, it's got to be like 3/4 of an inch 2, but preferably like an inch thick. So you need
it. Yeah, that's a pretty good size catfish.
Yeah, you need a nice big catfish. The one that I used was actually 17-pound catfish.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so once you trim, and you know, you want to trim that fat off. And but yeah, I tried to use the cookie cutter and mm-hmm. destroyed a cookie cutter. Because it doesn't like it went through the first one and then I bent it all and I'm like, oh, this okay, I gotta hide this and throw it away before my baking wife sees what I did. But then I just used but it was the right shape for a scallop, and so mm-hmm. so I just kind of used that, you know, I set the cookie cutter, you know, down, and then I just used that sharp knife and then actually cut through, and so yeah, people can go on and check that out. But it's yeah, I cooked them the same, just as you would a scallop. You put them in the pan, 90 seconds on each side, they cook through, and yeah, they were delicious. So I just did a really simple vinaigrette with it and served it with some asparagus.
How many quote unquote scallops did you get from one fillet?
Yeah, so I did oh geez. I mean, I only used half the fish, so like one fillet. It was a big fish. So one of the fillets, so just one of the sides was enough to get to make that whole dish. So I would say I don't know if you have a picture of it on the, I'm trying to think how many scallops are on there.
Let me see. I'll pull it up real quick.
I was really jealous of that recipe because I had that in my ideas notes languishing waiting for me to catch a fish big enough to do it, which I think will take a couple more years yet. So I'm glad you got to it first, but
listen, Adam,
looks awesome.
It's the same thing with Justin. Like I think it's for all of us. Like we have this amazing idea.
Yeah.
And then it's like, and then you go on, like you look on Instagram and you're like, think, oh, I'm the only one who thinks about this.
Yeah.
and then you go on and I'm like, oh, I can't remember what was that one. Who did one? It was just, I thought I had like this totally original idea, and I went on and I was going to send it to Justin, and somebody had just done it for Harvesting Nature. And I'm like, are you serious?
Come on.
Yeah. Scrap that idea. So, that happens a lot, but no, I think with those scallops, you guys, you need a bigger, thicker fillet. You could probably do it with a thinner fish, just the cooking time is going to be different. But if you want it, I tried to make them look exactly like a scallop, like those nice big scallops. That was the look I was going for.
It's a great picture.
Yeah, but I, you know, what I was going for too with that is, you know, you have the smaller eaters, and then you throw away those big ones. And yeah, is it good to throw away the big ones, right? Because they're the ones who are going to make more catfish, but we have a lot of big catfish. Like we have tons of trophies here in the Red River and right in my backyard, and it was okay to keep one, right? You know, I usually throw those big ones back, but it was just a fun way to use that fish, and you know, so I just I wanted to do something special with it. So
it's cool because it's too, it's like, I appreciate the simplicity and then also the creativeness of it to be like, see that catfish fillet? We're going to make scallops out of it. And then the sear, like your sear on it's pretty remarkable. It's like once, you know, on the Instagram, you have the picture of like them laid out on the cooking or the cutting board. And you can see like, you're like, oh yeah, that like looks like somebody cut circles in catfish. But then you scroll over one and you look to where it's seared and you're like, holy smokes, like, that looks like, scallops. Like that's phenomenal. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you're not going to catch a lot of those trophy fish. So I'm glad it worked on the first try. Yeah.
It's one of those things too. You kind of bite your nails about sometimes. Yeah. You're like,
I mean, I had a whole, I had the other fillet. I had the other side. So I was like, come on, this has to work. So yeah, I really watched that one. Yep.
What was the next one I wanted to talk about? Ooh, crispy whole fried panfish. We touched on panfish a little bit, but I think panfish maybe in the U.S. like greatly underappreciated. I don't see a lot of people eating whole panfish. Very popular in the places I've been, Central America, South America, the Caribbean, like even in the Florida Keys, you know, people are going to eat smaller fish pan fried or grilled like whole. So I think that one's yours, Adam.
Yeah.
I don't know what types of panfish you used.
Well, here in my lake, we were generally catching bluegills, sunfish, like pumpkin seeds, rock bass, which I never heard of anyone eating, which is too bad because they're not that bad. But I was talking to my buddy recently. He was working with a commercial Lake Ontario fisherman, and they said they catch, I don't know how much he said, so tons of sunfish, and they ship them all to California, which is interesting, where they really? Eat them on... Yeah, the fillets on sandwiches, I guess, but I doubt they're eating them whole. So that's kind of an interesting thing, like a bluegill sandwich or a sunfish sandwich. I'm not sure what's going on there, but yeah. So
to California, which is wild because they definitely have those fish in California too.
Yeah, yeah. So that was an interesting tidbit. But yeah, the whole fish, I kind of like, I like eating the whole fish. I try to do it as much as possible because you can just get so much more off the fish than if you just fillet it. And because those fish are so small, you do better getting more off it. And I'm also a really tactile eater, so I really like chicken wings. I like crabs and stuff and lobsters, like getting into my food with my fingers. So all you do is you catch a bunch. And honestly, those ones were caught off my dock. We were swimming and the bluegills kept biting us while we were swimming, so literally jumped out, like, got my fish out. I'm like, yeah, enough of this. Caught 15 of them and they stopped biting us, so yeah, I brought them up, just got them, scale them, trim them with some scissors. It's pretty quick work, and yeah, just kind of batter or like season them with flour and spices and fry them whole like that. And then you just have a big plate, like a big stack of them, and you just go to town with a couple of beers and just eat them like you would almost chicken wings or something. You got to work your way around the bones, but you figure out pretty quickly where those all are. And they're delicious. Like, you're talking, people love crappie, but they often won't go for the sunfish or bluegills, but they're all really delicious. So yeah. And you can catch, like, the limits are insane. All you need is a little worm, and I was just pulling them up with, I have a little kid's rod for my niece in my shed, and I just grabbed that, and I was just flicking them out of the water like every 3 minutes or so, and yeah, it's so easy, and I just had a big pile of fish for dinner. It was awesome. So yeah, that's a really cool one to go with.
Yeah, I did one with perch. You can do the same thing, you know, just use a cast iron skillet. Yeah, but yeah, definitely scale them first and then gut them, and they're delicious. I mean, you do tableside. Yeah, I've been in Italy, and you know, you do tableside whole fish, and the guy's sitting there, you know, taking it off and doing this whole big presentation. Oh, and I'm like,
I love that.
Yeah.
Serving way.
Yeah. I've had that in Rome, and you know, I wanted the experience of the whole thing. And now I'm like, oh, yeah, I have these perch that we caught in Fargo in a city pond. I can do the same thing. So
we did that. It was back probably, oh gosh, my daughter must have been one or two, and we were fishing at one of the lakes in San Diego and caught some of the like stalker rainbow trout that they put out there, and it was Christmas, and that's what we had instead of like a ham or a turkey or anything. It was just my wife and myself and my little daughter, and we that same morning had caught one of those big old rainbows, and so we just cooked it in the oven, roasted it, and then looked up on YouTube like how to serve a whole fish, and literally did that method that you described there. And like, to this day, we had some trout the other night, and I served it to my daughter that same exact way. And it was like, it doesn't even matter what fish it is. Like, it's such a cool, I think it's something, like, listeners out there, go Google like traditional European way to serve whole fish. It's such a delicate, like, neat process, the way they break the fish down with like a spoon and a fork. It's cool.
And like whole red snapper. I know that was my, that was a Tampa thing. That was something my great grandmother did. That was a specialty. She went and got it, and we still do it because I can get the whole red snapper at our Asian markets here in Fargo, and I've done that many times. So Yeah.
Well, that's good too. Have you seen some of the ways like they do it in Hawaii where they'll take a whole fish and they'll steam it? And then after it comes out of the steamer, they'll heat up like hot peanut oil, and they'll take the peanut oil and pour over the top of it, and it'll just like crackle the skin, and it's just like, oh man, phenomenal.
The Chinese do that too. They put like slivered green onions and chilies and garlic on top, and then and just pour the hot oil over, and it's just beautiful. It tastes so good. I do whole pike like that, or whatever I catch in the lake, and or bass. Yeah, it's really good. It's so satisfying. Like eating the one side of the fish and then pulling the skeleton off in one go. There's nothing more satisfying than that in life. Really like doing that.
Agreed. Well, guys, I think we've reached the end, unfortunately, because this has been a great conversation. I hope that everybody's taken away some encourageable tips. But as you both know, this is the time where I kind of like give the opportunity for a last thought or alibi or misfire that you may have. So, Adam, we'll start alphabetically, and you have a last thought for us?
Sure. Well, first of all, thanks for having me on. I could talk about this for hours, I think. But yeah, I was thinking, let's stop focusing on the lack of flavor in fish as a good thing, and let's start focusing on the flavor of fish as a good thing. Like traditionally, we focus on like a fish with zero flavor, like a cod, the like chicken breast of the sea, basically, as the pinnacle of good fish. Let's actually start focusing on the flavor of fish and all the different flavors we can find. That's a good thing rather than a bad thing, and go from there with trying new fish out.
Yeah, I like it. Jeff?
Yeah, I think I think Adam's done some great things on and gotten really creative with some fish, and it's you know, like Justin, like you said, wow, you know, you guys have challenged me, and I know like I'll see on, you know, Adam does a lot of great things, and he challenges me to come up with, try and do some interesting, some new and interesting things. But I think again, like, and I've said on another podcast, but just like when it comes to wild game, and I think it'd be the same for fish, is just find what you like. And like some of those recipes that you would order in a restaurant, right? Like maybe go and look in a cookbook or see like what's your favorite, like go on a seafood restaurant website and maybe like what's one of their popular things that they do, and then take that freshwater fish and see if you can like get creative with it and see what you can do. I think men and women who are listening to this podcast, Harvesting Nature, I think that they're open to those ideas and trying different things with the wild game and the fish they catch, and so I just really encourage them to try and get creative with what is out your back door. Like for me right now, it's catfish, and so I'm trying to get as creative as I can with that, and encourage a lot of people to start eating more of it, because we have a ton of it here. It's part of our resource. It's a natural resource, and I just hope more people use it.
Yep, I agree, man. What a great conversation, and talking about resources. Like it's just almost every place in the U.S. and Canada and North America and South America and the world has some access to freshwater fish. Obviously, excluding very dry and arid places, but still in some ability there. I don't know. I'd like to see when people start living a little bit outside the box, like maybe the box being like a battered catfish or, you know, whatever, like trying something different just to see. And the abundance of fish that are present allows one to become very, very creative. So, you know, if you don't understand what's in your local rivers, lakes, ponds, oceans, get out and try to wrap your head around it. Talk to friends, talk to family. Maybe don't take their eating recommendations, but try to just figure it out. But nonetheless, there's lots of room for growth there, and I think it's a good starting point. So I'm hoping that everybody enjoyed the conversation. I know I definitely did. And I thank you all for listening. And as always, all these recipes that we mentioned, be they full-on recipes or just Instagram or social media mentions, we'll tie those links down in the show notes. And then make sure you're headed over to social media and you're following both Adam and Jeff on their respective profiles, the Intrepid Eater and was it Wild Game and Fish? Boom, got it. Make sure you're following them on Instagram, Facebook, all those platforms. And then when you're done checking the boxes there, make sure you slide over to the Harvesting Nature pages and ensure you're following us because you're obviously going to miss out on something cool if you're not. And then for everybody else, punch that 5-star button on whatever podcast platform you're listening to. Tell us what we're doing wrong or, you know, tell us what we are doing right. So I thank everybody and have a good night.
You're listening to the Waypoint Podcast Network, brought to you in part by HuntStand, the number one hunting and land management app. I'm Will Cooper, host of HuntStand's Make Your Mark podcast. If you haven't already, download the free Waypoint TV app to listen to our podcast and watch the original films from HuntStand Presents anywhere, anytime, and on any device.